Yes. Well, I'm going to start with a video.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because you're a baby groomer, and I am a millennial.
Ah. Well, Melody, I am overqualified for this job.
I don't know where you got this. We don't do paper applications.
I made it. I don't do the internet.
Okay. That is the third time you have said that this interview, and it also says so on this homemade job application.
There you go, champ.
I don't know what this is for.
Now, don't you need a trophy anytime you... anything?
Oh, it's on. How'd you get here? Horse?
I drove. My car. I own it. I have to make more payments. How'd you get here?
I took an Uber.
Thank you.
I do not know what that is.
I'll just take it. Yeah, that's good. Take it.
Yeah, because I'm not a monster. Your generation is afraid of black people.
Your generation thinks you are black people.
But look at who you guys voted for.
Yeah, that's right. I voted. This is the only way you'll ever own a house.
Learning how to text is the only way you'll ever communicate with your son. So,
all right, guys, who took my Sheryl Crow album?
Gen X. You know what? You're hired.
I quit.
Dad!
So maybe some of you all can relate to that video a little bit in that that's how the younger generation seems. That's how... well, come on in.
Yeah, she had a headshot. I'm sorry.
We might be standing room, but you know, feel free to come on in.
She can sit right in your pillow. So, doesn't matter.
So,
you. There we go.
You might be able to relate a little bit, in that that's how you view the younger generations, right? They seem crazy, you know. They dress weird. They've got long hair when they shouldn't, or whatever it is. We don't get them. And what my hope today with this talk is, I want to give you help you move your understanding a little bit of the younger generation, including why they don't come to church, really in hopes that you can be a little further equipped to invest in the millennial generation through meaningful relationships. And so the first thing we need to talk about is, who are the millennials? So this term has been used for young people in general, but it is kind of defined as a specific age range. Here's your different generations. Millennials are ages 23 to 27 right now. This is per Barna's definition. Different definition. With different people, you'll see the change in definitions. The author who coined the term iGen in this book really defines iGen up to all the way age 25. So you get some gray areas between each of these generations. I myself am age 24, so some people put me in iGen, some people put me in millennial. I grew up with a very opinionated baby boomer father, so I have some baby boomer tendencies as well. So I'm kind of a weird mixture. So I do want to give kind of a disclaimer with that some of the stuff I'm talking about is not going to be true of every single young person everywhere, but hopefully it will give you kind of a bigger picture to see the young people through in interacting with young folks. So we're specifically going to talk about millennials. I don't have a lot of time to talk about iGen. If you want to have more discussion about them later, come talk to me. I'd love to. They're a fascinating generation that I myself still do not fully understand. But we're going to talk about millennials, and I want to also take a moment to reiterate how important the importance that we do invest in young people, because God uses young people. In 1 Timothy, Paul tells to Timothy, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe." He used Timothy as a young person. In fact, this verse has a call for young people, to stand up and to, you know, have speech and conduct and love and faith and purity that is an example to other people. However, this also is a call for other generations to not get upset at young people for something that may not matter like a hair bun, but rather their love, their speech, their faith and purity is an example. So we want to pour into young people, and there's going to be differences. And some of those things may not matter, some of them may. But let's try to understand and invest in them and realize that God still uses young people. So the first thing I'm going to do is talk about just some key aspects that have shaped their culture. Just the culture in general, what are some big influences? And the first, unsurprisingly, are parents. Parents impact children quite a bit. And the millennial generation is no exception. You all may be familiar with the term helicopter parents, who are hovering around, paying attention. Well, millennials didn't have helicopter parents. They had something called snowplow parents. This is one step ahead, where the parents get in front of the child through life, plowing ahead, removing any and all obstacles. And this has had some major ramifications as they particularly were entering the workforce. How are they having to deal with life? And an example of this is a story told by this gentleman, Doug Paul. He technically is a millennial on the older side, but a story illustrates what this looks like.
My dad ran HR for a Fortune 200 company for a number of years. And one of the things that he had to start adapting in the mid-2000s was what salary negotiations and sales looked like with millennials. Because what he found is that parents of millennials were coming to negotiate for their children when they were being offered jobs. Now, this sounds ridiculous, but like the fact that he had to change his HR practices because there were parents coming simply meant like there were a lot of parents doing this.
A Fortune 200 company had to change HR practices because of the parents of millennials. Now, this factor that has influenced millennials also influences iGen, and I would actually suggest substantially more. We're getting more snowplow parents. So this aspect is not going away in life as generations move on, but this has drastically impacted the millennial culture and how they deal with problems and how they've had to work through struggles in life. And some of that does require some growing up on young people's side, but also realizing the influence of parents may help us relate to and understand the younger generation. The next big influence is access. Millennials grew up with more with the coming of the internet and AOL instant messaging and the starts of social media that have become what it is today. So access has impacted them. And one of the faults is, they're addicted to technology. They are, yes, they are indeed, and in fact, every generation is now addicted to technology because technology is designed to be addictive. So that is one aspect, but there's a second aspect to access that really influenced the millennial generation, and that's that having access all the time, 24 hours, they're hearing every crisis that's going on everywhere in the whole world, every day, all the time. And as a result of that, there's a distrust of authority. They've seen the sex scandals in churches. They've seen the failures of governments. They've seen businesses lay off everybody and not care for their employees. And some of this is personal experience, whether that be the divorce of their parents or their friends' parents. Doug Paul, who we listened to earlier, explains it like a collapsed building. They were in a building of all these institutions and organizations, and they see or have experienced the collapse of those things, and they barely made it out. Where the church failed, it collapsed. The educational model failed. They got degrees but couldn't get jobs, right? All of these things broke and they barely made it out. They're not going back in. Having just made it out of a collapsed building, you're gonna be very skittish to walk back into one. So a distrust of authority has shaped the millennial generation. Now the last one, which is a little weird to understand, is something called modularity. And this is also somewhat connected to technology. Technology allows for this to happen a little more, but it is young people creating kind of the best life they can like Lego blocks, taking a piece over here, piece over there, this one over here, and I'm gonna build my life with Lego blocks. Now, this is in every area of life. So maybe in education, right, they started taking AP classes in high school to get some college credit, but they were able to do dual enrollment at the local community college. Then they attend the local community college full-time after graduation to save some money, but they'll start doing some online classes from the university over here. The last 2 years of their degree, they're going to go to this university because that's where they want their diploma from. They're going to form their educational model piece by piece. They may be doing this with jobs, where they're going to take a job over here and a job over there and a job over here. And by getting enough of those strung together, it looks like one full-time job. Modularity. Now, this is happening with churches, where maybe I can pull out my phone, you know, get Spotify up and listen to music way better than any church around me is going to play. And then I'm going to get on and hear Andy Stanley's podcast or some other preacher's sermon. Then I'm going to go to the local coffee shop and get together with some other young folks who are there gathering together. And I'm going to get some fellowship. I'm going to create my spiritual life journey with modularity. Now, even giving becomes modular. I'm going to give to Red Cross when I donate. I'm going to support this missionary on the field directly. I'm going to go support Compassion directly. Instead of this concept of giving to the church, and the church will then support other organizations. Giving has become modular. Now, some of us may think this is very bad. Some of it, I think, can be quite beneficial. I myself have used modularity. When I was in college, I had a hard time finding a good church, and so I would listen to podcasts. I was part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship on campus, and that really was the bulk of my fellowship and church. I attended a church on Sunday, but I really didn't do anything other than that. So creating a life with all the blocks can have some benefits, but it also can have some downsides. So all of these things, in some ways may be good and in some ways may be bad, but they've been significant factors in influencing the millennial culture. And this then leads us to church. Why are they not going to church? Now, some of those things we can maybe already see, a distrust of authority, a modular life. They may not want to enter back into the church. Barna, in this book, did a study on church and millennials. That's where a lot of this data is going to come from. And one of the questions was, why aren't people going to church? And for a long time, a lot of churches have been thinking, okay, we need lights, we need fog machines, we need the show, we need the whole thing, right? And that's just not true. Only 8% of millennials say they don't go to church because it's out of date. Only 8%. That's less than 1 in 10. Now, this is technically of those who don't think church is important. Less than 1 of 10 say it's because it's out of date. So that really isn't the reason. So then the question is, what is the reason? Well, the first of these, 39%. 39% of millennials are saying they're finding God elsewhere. Now, this may seem a little weird, but it has a lot of implications. They're experiencing God or finding God in different areas of life, which means they're not finding God in church. Now, I hope that makes you pause and think about what is their church model doing where they're not finding God. So there's a question of where are they finding God, and I'm not going to have all those answers for you, but one is technology. An example of this is a young man named John Kim. He's actually heavily involved in my dad's church back in Utah. He came to Christ a couple years ago. In his journey to coming to Christ, though, he wasn't going to a bunch of churches. He was listening to podcasts about Jesus, about preacher, about the Bible, about apologetics, or you know, different issues, using technology to learn about God. But again, some of this could be listening to sermons online. Or getting together with people in a coffee shop, right? Now, for some people who maybe aren't believers, it could be more ambiguous, saying they're a spiritual generation, but not a, you know, they're a spiritual person, but not a religious person, whatever distinction that means. But maybe, you know, they're going on walks through the woods to experience God, or getting together with fellow people and meditating or doing yoga, right? So it could become more ambiguous if someone's not holding to any sort of really God or deity, but even for those who don't think church is important, they're not finding it in church because they're finding it somewhere else. Which means churches need to start going somewhere else. Churches need to start looking to reach people where they're at instead of expecting them to come in the doors, because they're not finding that. They're not finding God there. The next reason, 35% say it's not relevant. Now, for me, this one hurts a lot. Because this is a biblical worldview. It should give us a way to view the world. We should have the most relevant message to life. And yet, millennials aren't seeing that in churches. And perhaps this is because a lot of churches will say, here's some truth, or let me beat you over the head with some gospel message that probably isn't even right. And not connecting it to the real life issues that a millennial is dealing with and the questions they're asking, which we'll come back to that. But they're not finding churches relevant. There's a pastor up in Wisconsin named Jeremy Edmondson. This picture was actually taken at GES a number of years ago. He said, with respect to millennials going through college, which they're now out of college, young people think college will provide the answers to who am I and how do I fit in, but it's 4 years without God, therefore no answers. They found no answers to those things in college, and they're not getting answers to them in church. And they should be. They should be. So what's the last reason? The last is that 31% say it's boring. Now, in the American church, we have a lot of trained communicators, people who've gone to seminary. This should not be the case, but they find it boring. Carrie Newhoff says it well, 15 minutes of boring is 15 minutes too long. 40 minutes of fascinating is fascinating. Having engaging communication and engaging messages is important for churches and for reaching young people. So in understanding a little bit of why they're not coming, those are, you know, some of the big reasons. I want to give you just a couple things, big picture ideas of how do you as an individual and how should churches be engaging with young people. And the first is authenticity. Authenticity. Young people know that humans are messed up and that the world is not right. They know this. And if you're going to stand up stage, probably physically elevated, and talk about truth and never reveal the fact that you yourself as the pastor or, you know, as an elder or as a person just in a communication, in one-on-one communication with somebody, reveal the fact that, yeah, you're human and you do have some problems, they're going to discount you because you're not being authentic, you're not being real. And so no longer do they care what you have to say. Now, does that mean you have to air out all of your dirty laundry? No, it doesn't. You know, be careful, be wise, but being authentic to the human reality is important. The next one is being relatable. Now, this is the concept of relating God's truth to real life. And with a church, maybe what this means is we need to do what I would call reverse apologetics. Maybe instead of saying, here's God's truth, go figure out why it matters, we start saying, here's an issue in life, let's bring it back to what God has to say. Making ourselves relatable in one-on-one communication, making what we have to say in a church relatable to real life. And the last one is respect. Now, this should be obvious. However, the millennial generation has been poked fun of through media, in churches, on stages, all over the country, and now iGen will be getting more of it. And the reality is, if someone is being disrespected, they no longer care what you have to think, what you have to say, what advice you have, because you don't care about me. So by disrespecting young people, we have automatically lost our seat at the table with young people. And churches, maybe they're not publicly criticizing, but they are not valuing what a young person has to say. A friend of mine named Andrew Murphy, who's right in the middle of the millennial generation, says about church, I want to be seen as more than a seat filler or a money giver. Young people have something to offer. Yeah, sometimes we might be arrogant. Yeah, sometimes we might be entitled. And yes, we don't know everything. But that doesn't mean we don't have something to offer. And so valuing what a young person has to offer, giving them a seat at the table, which in some cases might mean hiring a millennial on staff at a church. Oh my, that seems terrible, right? But we're valuing what a young person has to say. And part of respecting them and valuing what they have to say is having them help in reaching young people. Because it turns out young people might know something about reaching young people. And in fact, I would suggest it's very necessary. Young people attract young people. If you have a church with no young people, it's going to be hard to become a church with young people. So using, investing into the young people you do have in your life, in your church, to further reach other young people is important. Now I want to give you one more tool in thinking through how to engage in generations, with generations in general, and with millennials specifically. This comes from this author named James Chung from this book. He's with InterVarsity. He suggests that each generation has kind of a main question they're asking. In general, a main question that they're asking, and they're not all the same. And this is a starting place for conversation. And so the baby boomer question is, what is true? What is true? What is truth? The fact that it is true, it matters to me. Because it matters that it's true. But the other generations are not asking that question. Gen X is asking, what is real? And millennials are asking, what is good? What good is it doing in the world? Millennials are the most cause-oriented generation in recent history. They don't care that you think it's true. They care what impact it's making. What good are you doing with that truth in the world? And iGen is asking the question, what is beautiful? What is beautiful? Now, that one's a little weird, and so I want to illustrate it with a Coke commercial, because Coke has this figured out for reaching iGen.
Coke?
Is it Coke?
How much time?
Yeah. Is it Coke? It's the same for everyone.
You can get one if you want it. No matter where you're from.
He drinks Coke and she drinks Coke.
Even though they disagree.
Here's a one.
And what do the buckets look like?
You aren't the same as me.
Sorry, Streaky.
Did you want to use your example of involvement with Calvary at a place on the table? I don't know if you did or not.
But that's cool if you're not.
We all have different hearts and hands.
Hands holding various views.
Don't you see? Different is beautiful.
And together is beautiful too.
Having beauty by different people coming together and getting along. That picture is beautiful. People with differences where there's actually unity. Now, some iGen, yes, will take that much further into areas where we may not agree, with things that we may have disagreements with from a biblical worldview. But even in churches, we should have unity. We should have unity with people with different political views, with different ideological views, right? We should be able to get along and come together. And yes, for iGen, that some of that's going to be, some of what they're going to care about is going to be harder to deal with, like the LGBTQ community. That becomes a very big issue for iGen. And it's going to become a big issue for the church, if it isn't already. So that's the question iGen is asking. What is beautiful? Millennials asking, what is good? What good are we doing in the world with this? Gen X, what is real? And baby boomers, what is true? Now, these questions are not the ending place. They're the starting place. They're the starting places for conversation, starting places for engaging in issues of real life that they may care about. And yes, not every young person is going to be asking this question. Like I said, I'm a weird mixture. I land more on the what is true side of things than I do on the other side, you know, on the what is good and beautiful. They're a starting place. So where are they? What is similar between all these questions? What do all these people actually want? And I would suggest it's hope. Now hope, and that's what James Chung is suggesting, is it's hope. But hope is that I'm using in this situation is much more broader than we may be thinking. It's a glimpse that things will be right. It's a desire that everything will be good, that there will be beauty in people getting along, that there actually is truth. And there is a real life. A desire for those things to actually come into fruition in a good way. Now, as a group of people with a free grace perspective and a biblical worldview, we should be able to speak into hope much more specifically with assurance. Now, yes, this is assurance of salvation. And yes, there may be some people, some baby boomers, who are more interested in the question, am I going to heaven or going to be on the new earth? You know, and do I have a guarantee of that? But a millennial isn't asking that question because that's about truth. What they're asking is, what good is that doing in the world? Okay, so now we have an assurance of hope that the world is going to be right, that things will be perfect. There will be a millennial kingdom. There will be a new heaven and a new earth where Jesus is ruling. We have an assurance of things in each of these categories, but we don't always connect them to real life. And that hope, that assurance, can also impact us now. And young people need to understand that that can impact us now in terms of not being anxious, realizing how we can go through life trusting in God and how we can try to do what good in the world that we can based on that and not having to worry about getting it all right. Young people long for hope, and a biblical model and worldview gives them assurance that it in fact will be right. So we should be able to speak into that. And I want to reiterate to you that this is important, pouring into young people, and that God uses young people. In Kings, in the book of 2 Kings, it talks about King Josiah, who became king at age 8. Age 8. And it says of King Josiah, before him there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor did any like him arise after him. He was a good king, and he started at age 8. We should not discount young people. Yes, they may be weird, they may be confusing, we may not get them, but let's approach them with authenticity, respect, and relatability, and see what God does with them. Because God can use young people. And it turns out I've been blowing through my time way faster than I expected, so we'll have more time for questions, but I want to challenge you. As you go forward, hopefully this gives you just a little bit of a glimmer of young people and maybe what helps, you know, what has influenced them. I want to challenge you to find some young people in your life. Pour into young people. Maybe invite someone to coffee and hear their story. What's impacted them? And do so with authenticity, relatability, and respect. Now we can talk about questions.
Wow. Good job.
Great job. Yeah.
I really like what you said. I really think that it's right on. But I have a question. Do you think that this is worldwide? Is it for the United States? Or what spots of the United States?
Sure. So some of the data that... So the question was, is this localized... Sorry, I have to repeat it for the recording. The question is for... whether this is localized to the United States or certain parts of the United States, how much of it's worldwide. Barna's study is pretty focused on the U.S., so that's really where a lot of the data is coming from. However, a lot of these trends are still similar across the world, from my understanding, and the millennial generation can be quite different in a lot of the same ways that we see here between generations. But do realize a lot of this is U.S.-focused. So I can't guarantee how much it is in other countries.
Michael, can I
ask
you that?
Yeah.
Because for my ministry, I go to Nepal and Myanmar training pastors and leaders. And as you know from the news, there's been a coup in Myanmar. And the interesting thing is when it began, I told people that the military, the Pathmadaw, does not understand how the country and the generations have changed. I also said that the young people don't understand the brutality of the army, and that's exactly what's happening. But what's happened is because of social media, they have access to all kinds of worldwide social media. The culture of Myanmar has radically changed in 10 years, more than it changed in the 200 years before that.
Mm.
And so the answer to the question is, obviously, it's a matter of degrees, but the answer is yes. Social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes?
I am seeing that women, young women in particular, have felt underutilized, and maybe that's the best word,
mm-hmm.
underutilized in the church.
Yeah.
And so therefore they feel like, why am I here? And this is conservative, you know, evangelical people, but women in particular, they're feeling underutilized, you know.
Yeah.
So forth. Would you respond to that?
So the concept of women, young women in churches feeling underutilized and not necessarily finding a place, and I think that goes back to some of the same points of they don't see it as relatable and really that concept of respect as well, of being valued. The average age of a church pastor, I forget what the number is nowadays. A couple years ago it was I think something like 62. I could be wrong on that. But, I mean, it is really high. Really high. And there's this whole generation that has not been... There's this whole generation that is not being involved in that. Whether they're, you know, that's actually on staff or being included to lead things and be discipled and poured into. And so, in hearing that, what I'm thinking is, you know, a lot of young women are not getting those relationships and investment from a church or from people in a church, feeling like they're valued and have a place, and that what's being taught there actually relates to them.
And having a place to serve—that's my point.
Yeah, yeah, that as well.
That's
yep.
What
you're telling me. Yeah.
What did you have to do to get some involvement in your context in Alabama?
I'm at a church in Alabama I've only been there for a little over a year, but I have been able to get plugged in to a lot of things, including thinking about mission and vision and some bigger questions that they've allowed me to be in. But the first thing the pastor did was say, okay, here's the slides, Sunday morning. Show up and do it every week. So I showed up and did it every week. And eventually he said, okay, now I trust you, that you're not going to flake off, that you're going to actually be there. So there is a reality that young people are going to have to invest. But that's where nowadays a lot of things are that investment is through intentional one-on-one relationships rather than, you know, the church previously has been, you automatically see the value of the church, so come be a part of our church, walk in the doors and get involved. That's just not true anymore. They distrust the church. They don't necessarily see it as relatable or valuable. So now to get somebody to see that as relatable or valuable or feel valued, it's going to take a lot more intentional relationships with young folks. Yeah?
What's your name?
Jennifer.
Jennifer and I were kind of talking beforehand in that, yes, yeah, young people, they want that kind of one-on-one connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely been thinking, especially with unbelievers for sure, but even people who, like, say they're Christian but don't have the assurance,
mm-hmm.
It's like they go to church and it's like they don't get the right answer because like, the free grace perspective is not a major thing. And so really it should start out with like those unbelievers and the Christians with the wrong view. It does need to start out with that one-on-one because they're not going to get that from the majority of the messages. Like from what I am hearing is just that all these churches are great on like discipleship and this is what you should do as like a faithful Christian.
Mm.
And I know a lot of churches, they also try to put in a salvation message, like maybe at the end or at the beginning, or maybe they do it every once in a while.
Yeah.
But like, maybe it just wouldn't relate to those younger people as much as with that one-on-one and like showing them the word for themselves and like being poured into.
Yeah.
It's like, I see that like, need that pouring into first, and then you bring them into the church. Like, this is how you can live out your Christian life with the assurance that.
Yeah, and some of that relates to the fact that a lot of young people are not asking the question, "What happens to me after I die?" Or, you know, "Can I get to heaven? How do I get to heaven?" That's not the question they're asking. They want to make an impact in the world, whatever that means. And so they want to know how it actually impacts life now. What's going on? And it's great that you think you'll get to heaven. And it's great that you might, you know, feel great about God or feel his presence. Okay, what difference does it make in the world? What impact are we having? And it's not that these other things are not real, are true, are good, are things we should talk about. They absolutely are. But in reaching young people, you've got to start with where they're at. And a lot of them are going to be saying, well, what are you doing for the poor? What are you doing for these causes? Yeah?
Just as a comment, it sounds like James is a millennial.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point.
I write software for a living, and so I'm involved on programming news groups and stuff online.
Yeah.
And most of the people that are there are millennial. There's some of us old timers who are less talkative, but this is very true. I see it in because there's a site called Hacker News that's Silicon Valley people started it, and but it's got people all over the nation. And if there's ever a cause that somebody's, you know, there was one famous open source developer whose house burned down, and they're always talking about social justice things.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, you can tell they're all looking for meaning, even though they're all very work-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
They all want something outside of work. And it's any kind of cause you can imagine, and often sometimes they are, you know, LGBTQ and all that stuff too, but they are obviously all looking for meaning, and it's interesting to see that, because it's usually, in my mind, a Christian idea that your life is for service. Jesus came not to
mm-hmm.
be served, but to serve, and we're to imitate him.
Right.
These are people who are often atheist.
Right.
And still looking for meaning, because they can see that working for a living is not enough.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So I'm a college pastor, and we do a lot of outreach on campus
yeah.
and stuff. And I've noticed that a lot of our outreach is based towards a millennial view of what is good.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our questions that we ask and engage them is, okay, why is this good? Why? One of the questions that really get them on their toes is it okay to eat babies? And they're like, of course not, right? And then so they're
right.
just, okay, then why is that bad? And I'll put it down. So as far as tactics go and stuff, maybe through your research or through experimentally, what are ways to reach the iGen generation of what is beautiful?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure I'm going to have as hard, you know, concrete answers for you, but the iGen generation is very different. And what they want beauty. They're asking the question, "What is beautiful?" But their immediate need, and even in college, what they're seeking for is security. They want physical security, emotional security, and financial security. Now, most iGen have physical security, so that's not talked about a whole lot. But they want emotional security, which means if you have an opinion counter to me and you speak it, I'm offended and I no longer have emotional security. Now, that's going to get really hard to deal with if we get some kind of extreme versions of that. But they want emotional security, so all of those differences have to be dealt with very carefully and delicately because of that emotional security. And then the last one is financial security, which is really why a lot of iGens go to college. It's simply a means to get financial security, not a place to expand their views, to be challenged, or grow as a person. It's simply a route to get a job to make money. And so that's how iGen is seeing a lot of this. And so in terms of interacting with iGen, we have to deal with the questions, and this becomes very hard, that they're asking of racial tension. How are we getting unity between people of different races? What does the church have to say about that? Now, Sunday morning can be one of the most segregated times in the week. So on that particular topic, we're not necessarily strong on being able to deal with it. But that might mean we need to intentionally engage in hard conversations and get to know somebody who's different than us. It's really connecting it to things they're experiencing on campus. A lot of, particularly on colleges, there's going to be a lot of relational sort of aspects, broken relationships that they'll experience. So sitting down and having conversations more on that sort of thing. The shock factor I'm more reluctant about because of that emotional security.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps. I know it's not as concrete as you would like, I'm sure.
Comment on story?
Yes, that's a good point. And another aspect of that is story. Seeing the story of the Bible as a unified story. And so, you know, most gospel presentations are just, well, you're a sinner, you're going to die, so go to, you know, believe in Jesus, go to heaven, right? But that's not the whole story of the Bible. The story is, it starts with creation, where God created the whole world, and it was perfect. It was good. There was perfect relationship between God and men, men and men, and men in creation, men in the world, with the environment, right? It was right, it was good, and then entered the rebellion, where man rebelled against God, did what was not did the one thing they were not supposed to do, and it broke relationships in all of those areas. Broke that relationship with God, broke that relationship with man, and broke that relationship with the world. And so the story of the Bible is God working through people to bring about redemption. And that's where eventually we have the hero. Jesus shows up on the scene to be the hero. And he gives us a path to restore those relationships. And that's where ultimately we have the hope of restoration, where the world is right. The relationships between man and God are restored. The relationship between men and men are restored. And the relationship between men and creation are restored. And that's the story we're entering into. That's the story we're invited to be a part of. And in terms of college campuses, where I heard that story told that way was a college campus. And that story in that way is what a lot of people, helped a lot of people get it. And it clicked with, what is this actually about? It's not simply, I'm a sinner, I'm going to go to hell. Like, yes, that's true, but it's not the full story. I don't know if that helps. Yeah?
No, go ahead and take her, because she's...
I just had a question. Do you have any suggestions for breaking past the mindset that seems to be especially common with millennials, that if you are not in our stage of life, we can't connect with you?
I don't know if this answer will be as concrete, but everybody wants to know that whoever you are, that you're rooting for me, right? You're on my side. And so if you can communicate that to millennials by hearing them, listening to their story, you will have an avenue to pour into them. And according to the data, in general, millennials are far more open to mentorship than a lot of other generations. But an aspect of that is that... you have to listen and learn from the millennial. It's a two-way mentorship. It's not just that I'm here to tell you, the young person, everything you need to know. It's that you actually have something to offer for me to listen to as well. So I do think there's a way to enter into that, but you have to help them know that you're on their side, not just there to criticize this thing or that thing about their life that's wrong. I don't know if that helps, maybe.
I don't mean to embarrass JB, but this is JB's gift. You never meet anybody that's ever met JB that doesn't think that JB cares about them and their opinion, and you know, he'll come up to you and give you a hug every time he sees you.
Yep.
Even if he barely knows you.
Yep.
And I think that's, there's a reason why he's tied with Diane, because she's the same way. She shows that you matter to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Younger women, and some of them jump in and they're soaking in the program, not the program, the relationships, the wisdom, and others say it's a commitment thing, and we feel like we're going to come unless something better comes up, and then we're probably not going to come. And so that's one thing. And another thing is, and you haven't even mentioned, is the builders. I would love them to be there.
Yeah.
Because they have more wisdom than all
yeah.
of us.
Absolutely.
And they can't handle the non-commit. They try to do the pro. They try to do it and they get mad and then they don't do it.
Right.
So I feel like we're missing out on some of the gold nuggets that could be passed down.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think some of that relates to this modularity concept, where I'm gonna piece together my life, which might mean some weeks it's gonna include this thing and some weeks it's not.
It's probably driven by the questioning of authority, though, because they've been disappointed so many times from God's side.
Yeah. And so I don't have a direct answer for you, like that's a silver bullet or anything. But something young people we don't know everything. We do need to learn that commitment matters, and businesses have not always been helpful in like making them learn that commitment matters. So they've kind of conformed, right? And so it is something that's going to have to be learned, but it's also a great place where we can extend grace, and particularly as people who are going to accept a biblical worldview where we get grace no matter what. We should be in a great position to extend grace to the young folks who maybe haven't figured all things of life out. That doesn't answer it, but I think we're out of time. So thank you all for being here and engaging.